Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Non-Pro Show. I'm James, and I'm here with Matt. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about The Last of Us 2. Now, this is a spoiler cast, so if you don't want spoilers, leave now. If you're sticking around, well, you probably already know this, but The Last of Us 2 is a sequel to The Last of Us, the smash hit game by Naughty Dog from 2013. All right, I say we just get into it.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Lots of things I know we both want to discuss, and just dive right in.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, I think we should talk primarily about the story.
Oh boy, you're really going into the deep end right away, huh?
Well, you know, because I think it's kind of the most impressive and yet most frustrating thing about the game. It's funny. I don't know, not like I disliked it, but I felt very different coming off this game than I did anything else I've played in a very long time.
You know, this is something I've been thinking about, and I've been wondering about, like, why it's the way it is. I'm in a similar boat. I enjoyed the story overall.
For sure.
There's a lot of things I want to discuss about, but overall, I enjoyed it. But it was a very different feeling from other games that I've played recently. But most importantly, from The Last of Us 1, it just had, like, I came away from The Last of Us 2 stories much differently from The Last of Us 1's. I mean, I guess partially because I think, for me at least, just the fact that I think it was like a different kind of story, and kind of like, I think like the impacts are kind of different, and just the fact that it's been 7 years since the first game, and I guess time has moved on in more the ways than one, in terms of like video game stories, but also in real life. So I feel like stories hit differently now than it did in 2013.
For sure. Time has changed everything about this game, even just like its release. Like the window it's being released in, you know, felt the whole zombie story in the midst of a pandemic. Like it already felt like difficult to play just because of that broad idea in general, let alone the fact that I think the game's, you know, for lack of any other better word, incredibly ambitious narrative structure and essentially narrative attempt. Right. And we can get into if we think it succeeds or does not succeed this, but it's essentially built itself to try and be an empathy engine. And I think the more that I think about it, that's what, you know, that's where I'm coming to enjoy about this game, right? You know, it's, and hear me out here. So it sets us up in the prologue, gives us a little bit of Abby and gives us a bunch of Ellie, and spoiler, the big one, kills Joel. We don't have the luxury of even mourning Joel like some of the characters in the game actually might, because we skip 3 months ahead to Seattle. So that death of, you know, our protagonist from the first game, a character that is obviously complex and conflicted, and that we should have conflicting feelings about, right? Being that we're now Ellie, the protagonist, you know, and we're out to get revenge for his sake. And at every turn, the game wants us to feel conflicted about that idea, right? I feel like at every point where we're comfortable with, we try to get comfortable with Ellie's revenge narrative, it throws something in there like, oh, wait, she did know Joel was a piece of crap and doomed the rest of the human race. You know, it completely wants to put you at odds with, it wants you, the player, to be a little bit at odds with the story. And then, bam, switch to Abby, right? So we hit the climax of Ellie's story, and then we switch to another narrative. We take that entire narrative of our enemy, right? Who we then begin to, or at least should begin to build empathy for, as she goes through, in my mind, a similar story that Joel goes through in the original, a narrative we're already relatively familiar with, right? There's a young person who's in trouble and they begrudgingly help them, and then they feel guilty, and then they go back and they become compatriots, and they learn together to work through their issues and get, you know, the Lev helps Abby conquer a fear, does all this sort of stuff. We get to know Abby, we get to know her friends, and we get back up to that moment with Ellie already at the point where we've already questioning her decisions, you know, the accidental death of the pregnant lady and all this other stuff. And, you know, and then we have to physically commit violence against the character we already know. And then we switch back to Ellie, right? Where we're at conflict with her again, right? Because, right, you know, I don't know about you, but we want her to stay with Dina. We want her to, you know, to cut her losses, you know, because we feel empathy now for both characters, right? Though I think personally the emotional weight of this story ends up on Abby. You know, but then we have to go and we have to do it again, all from the other perspective. I think this game's intent is to make you feel uncomfortable because, I mean, one, because if it's not, I'm not sure what they were making this game for, because I don't necessarily know if fun is the word I would use to describe it. Though I would say good. You know, if it's not meant to build empathy between these characters, if it's not meant for you to feel ill at the actions you're choosing to commit against other humans, I'm not 100% sure what the point of the narrative is. But that's my take on it. I assume you have a slightly different take on it, but that's kind of where I've settled in, that's made me feel a bit of understanding on how I think, or what I think their goal was.
I think, you know, it's funny you say that, because I honestly think I'm in kind of a similar mindset in terms of story. I do agree that the story was designed to make you uncomfortable. It's funny. I know you mentioned, like, at the before about the skip. And I wanted to point out, like, how it's kind of very interesting how Naughty Dog is willing to do that kind of skip. Because if you take a look at a lot of, like, AAA gaming, so much is put on into, like, their immersion, because, like, video games aren't just movies. Like, you it's interactive. You could see things that a movie wouldn't see. And so you would have a lot of these things where, like, okay, if this was a different game, you might have a whole entire sequence of the whole entire, like, the funeral scene for Joel, and or some kind of, like, mourning sequence, like, where you walked around. But, like, the Last of Us 2 has the self-confidence, I guess you might say. It's like, no, we're going to go straight to the revenge. Because, like, we want you, like, this is what we want you to feel. We're not going to drag it out. We're going to go straight to it. Like, we're going to treat this like a movie.
You can't have times to come to terms with it. It actually, you know, not that this is not, this is not a knock against it, but it uses a bunch of standard storytelling tricks in very great ways, right? The time skip, the save the cat. One of the first things we see Abby do is save a zebra, right? We establish early on that, you know, that this girl is good inherently, right? Saving animal, defenseless animal is equated to good in, you know, shorthand narrative and storytelling. So, you know, but it uses, you know, essentially very basic tricks, but it uses them very well. And in ways that other games don't. Right, that games just don't attempt to do.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely kind of like Naughty Dog's trademark, even in, like, say, like the Uncharted games, which was very much like a cinematic action adventure kind of movie. And so I think that's very You definitely see it a lot in this one, and I think it pulls it off very well because that's what Naughty Dog does. In terms of getting back to the story, I agree that they really want you to feel this way, but there are certain parts where I feel like they kind of maybe miss the mark, or they try to lean into things too heavily. Especially like when trying to kind of like establish both characters as sympathetic, but also they're also have not good for reasons, and like they have reasons to hate each other, and like you're supposed to feel that hate as well as a player. The game is famously been noted to be based around hate. Neil Druckmann, I think the director of the game, says hate is a very big theme about that, and we'll probably get to that in a little bit. Expand more into that. I think for certain things, it really, like you said, it does tricks to make you think, like make you feel certain ways. But like, I think you could, for certain, you could sort of see either like, I guess like the, I don't know, like what would say, like either the man behind the curtain or like the seams in the background, where it's like, okay, yeah, they're trying to push it. And it seems kind of like almost, I don't know, we want to say like patronizing. I don't know if patronizing is the right word, but it was like, okay, I get it, game. Heavy you want handed. Me to feel this. It's heavy-handed, exactly. That's the exact phrasing I was thinking. Thank you.
I'm trying to think of help me find an example of where I think they did this poorly, and I'm going to try to find an example where I think they did it really well, because I think there are good examples of both in the game.
Right.
There are also really good examples, you know, and I want to save that conversation from when we talk about gameplay, but there are a couple of parts that I'll do it here because I think it works, because it's both gameplay and narrative. It's using gameplay to instruct narrative in only the way a game can, right? I almost want to coin the phrase for this game, play don't show.
Right
Let's talk about Abby, right?
Okay,
so Abby is going after that sniper, right? And the whole sequence makes you hate the sniper more and more, just because it's one of those like annoying ass video game levels, you know what I mean, where you can't actually shoot the guy, right? If you try to shoot the guy, you're gonna get shot, so you have to move forward,
right?
And it sends all the, you know, all the stuff at you, yada yada yada, and then you find out it's Tommy.
Yeah,
right.
That was really cool. And like, I know it's supposed to be like an annoying thing, but I will say that was actually one of my favorite parts of the game, just because it's very reminiscent of movies like Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, it's great.
And Saving Private Ryan, with that sniper fight, that kind of thing. And like, just the tension and kind of like the frustration of like being pinned down by a sniper. But like, now you're also throwing the zombies in the mix. And like, the sniper's like drawing the zombies towards you, so you have to like fend off attacks from both directions. I agree with you. That was a very good example.
Yeah, it's incredible, and I love, it was weird to say I love it, but I love how it robs you of the satisfaction, right? Because you get there, and it's, you know, it's Tommy, and you're like, no. Right? Like, I, you know, and they take the choice obviously out of your hands, because you know that you meet Tommy later on, blah, blah, blah. You know, that you're not killing Tommy there, but like, even if you were to do it there, it would be wholly unsatisfying now, because, you know, even though you wanted it so badly when you were playing through that whole scene, I'm going to get this sniper, you know? So yeah, I think that's a great, that's like the perfect, I think, encapsulation almost of this in a, like a mini sense.
I agree with that. I guess I thought about it, so by example, for like a bad example, which I think drew some controversy when a game was released. I've got the name, but when Ellie kills the dog,
Oh yeah.
And then what you find out, like a bit before, like what you find out was like, oh wait, this was Abby's dog, and like she, you get to play with the dog, that kind of thing. In all fairness, well, I don't know if all fairness, but like I guess clarification's sake, I don't hate the scene. I think like a lot of people definitely hate it. It's like, oh, you kill a dog, like blah blah blah. Like killing animals is just a cheap ploy to have shock value. And to an extent, yes, I do agree. I think it is one of those common tricks. It's like, okay, yeah, this is a person that kills animals is bad, but taking it in context is like. Before, like, I heard about this kind of controversy before I actually played the game, and I thought it was, like, something that happened within, like, the span of an hour. It was like, okay, yeah, that's very cheap and heavy-handed. But when I actually played it, it was like, oh, wait, it's, like, these two sequences, like, where you play with the dog, but then later when you kill the dog as Ellie, they're, like, hours apart. There's lots of stuff going on in between. And kind of the same thing happens with the rest of Abby's friends that you kill as Ellie, but people seem to just focus on the dog. So, I mean, I didn't hate it, but I think that's an example. It's like, okay, yeah, that's a heavy handed. It's like, oh, people are bad kind of thing. And I think this, I'm going to bring this up later in a later section, but.
Well, let's.
That was one thing that popped into my mind.
Well, let's transition a little bit. I'd love to transition to some of the controversies around this game because I think you hit it on the head, right? So the big one I'm aware of is that the game's big spoilers got leaked ahead of time and people got upset by them.
Right.
To say that this is a game that you cannot read, right, is an understatement. Right. It leans on, again, the term I want to coin of play, don't show. Mm. If you were to just read this game, even if you were to just see it as a movie, I do not think it works. Mm. Right. There's a sense we have as video gamers that, you know, that we inhabit the characters we play, even in a game like this. Right. Where we're third person over the shoulder still playing as them, there's, you know, we become them, right? And that's important to the story they're telling. Mm. So reading the spoilers for this game early would be just terrible. Right? Like just a terrible experience because you miss so much of the narrative because it's in the gameplay.
Right.
But there was a lot more to the controversy than that. So, because I think that'll transition us too into some of the characters and things like that. So,
okay.
Would you talk a little bit? You definitely have a bit more. I specifically avoided the controversy and the spoilers ahead of time. I tried to do some catch up afterwards, but it was hard because it seemed like a bit of a mess.
Right. I mean, there is a lot. And I'm going to say, full disclosure, I'm not aware of all of them. And also, full disclosure, for certain things, I feel like I'm probably not the best person to explain them.
For sure.
But I guess from my perspective, I'm just going to say that these are my thoughts from my perspective as me, a guy.
For sure,
that plays video games, but just like throwing that out there.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with me, right? I obviously have my opinions on some of these things, but you know, when we get to it, I'll note it. You know, like that is to the best of my ability, right? I am obviously not some of these marginalized groups, right? You know, and obviously my opinion does not represent them in any way.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, so I have a first one. Is kind of like the politics of the game. Like mentioned earlier before about like how Neil Druckmann, the director of the game, said the game's all about hate. And this hate was drawn from his experiences growing up. He grew up in Israel, I think as younger, then I think he moved to America eventually. But the hate thing came from he witnessed, I forgot the exact incident, but it was a very infamous lynching that occurred, I believe, in either Israel or Palestine, where I think Palestinian rioters lynched an Israeli Defense Force soldier. And he witnessed that as a kid, and he's on record saying, he's like, at that time he hated Palestinians, and like that was a big narrative drive of like this drive for his narrative of hatred and revenge in this game. And so I say that because there's a lot you could see of Israeli Palestinian politics. And kind of like the stories and like kind of the background info. If you look at the things about the whole entire the Fedra occupation of the cities, like of this military force occupying the zone inhabited by people that were living there already. These clashes between insurgents and the military, like an established military force. I feel like the game tries to paint both sides as like, both sides have bad aspects of both groups. And that's, like I said, like, it's like 7 years from 2013, 2020, like there's certain things that like you kind of really have to be careful, of, and like, be very aware of when telling a story, and like both sidesism is one of those perilous things, and I feel like it slips up a bunch there. Certain aspects about it was like, well, okay, the occupying military force, the game's not afraid to like paint them as almost like fascists, and like they do very terrible things, but then they try to like but also on the other hand, these insurgents and like the scars, they do terrible things too. So really, both sides, they might not be justified at doing this, but you can understand why they're doing this. And that's like kind of like, I know like where you're drawing inspiration from. And if you're like, you can't really apply that logic to groups that are supposed to, that are, I don't know if like they're not even like supposed to directly, but like unintentionally they do represent real life groups and people, and try doing that kind of thing really doesn't work out a lot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think this game at a few points confuses building empathy with forgiveness of past sins or current sins, you know, for lack of better words here. But you can have kind of empathy for your enemy and still realize that they may be bad or their actions are violent and horrible. You know, and it's difficult. It's difficult because obviously the game, you know, only has a few characters in which to show those individual aspects of, right? But then you get, like you said, all of this background that mirrors real world politics in some ways a little too starkly, right? And
right.
I don't want to discourage fiction, obviously, from telling, telling stories that relate to the real world. That's obviously where the best fiction comes from. But yeah, I can totally see that being difficult. You know, it's certainly one of the difficult aspects for the game for me is that, you know, it feels almost like a little cheap, not cheap, not unearned. I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, the fact that when you kill someone, you know, you hear someone else call out their name that they've been killed, right? It's, you know, the game treats them as faceless enemies until the very last second, just to remind you, hey, to get the message of the game, remember that they're not faceless enemies.
That was something that stuck out for me as well. For the first few times, I was like, okay, yeah, that's kind of twisted, but like, okay, I see what they're doing. But like by the end of the game and kind of everything, It was like, all right. It's another thing. It was like, all right, I know what you're doing, game. Like, I get it. And like, okay, like, it's still, I get your point, and I think you're doing it good, but I think you're trying to hammer it a bit too hard. It overstays its welcome just a bit.
Yeah, you just become a little numb to it.
A little numb to it, yeah.
Which, even if that's the intention, right, like, I think that's a missed point, right? Because if you're too numb to it, then, you know, the message isn't getting in.
Right.
So I think a couple of the other bigger controversies were obviously the big spoilers. Let's talk, you know, and this will kind of transition us a little bit into the characters, unless we've missed a big one that you can think of.
I think, this other stuff I want to talk about relates to characters, so I think now's a good time.
Cool. Awesome.
To transition. Yeah.
Awesome. So let's talk about the elephant in the room. I got to this portion of the game on Father's Day, no less. Joel's death at the end of the prologue.
Uh-huh.
Assumably, that was one of the big leaked spoilers. And controversially, right, it means there was also a bunch of stuff Naughty Dog fabricated to show us, to hide that, which is not unusual, but it still feels wrong. You know what I mean? Like, it feels wrong when Marvel does it, and it feels a little wrong here. But yeah, I guess let's talk about Joel's death.
I'm kind of okay with it. I mean, maybe this is a hot take, but I thought, maybe it is like kind of push, like, okay, revenge, like, so let's kill off, the main character. But I thought the game did a pretty good job at establishing about like how this messed up Ellie really bad. There's a lot you could talk about, like just messing up a character for the sake of messing up a character. And there's probably the stuff I'll agree with, like about how like that's not the greatest thing and how it's kind of trite and boring and overdone. But I liked the stuff about like the flashbacks between Joel and Ellie, and kind of seeing like their relationship fragment and just kind of like break apart. Kind of like find a feeling like the scene where Ellie like finds the truth when she goes back to the hospital and like actually walks the hallway and goes to the operating room and finds the recording of what happened. I thought that was, I think I mentioned this on Discord or something, but I think that was one of those things where like I audibly like gasped and like said an expletive out loud when oh man, Ellie actually finds out. Because I think that was one of the things that was left hanging from the first game, is like the ending of the first one is like, does Ellie believe Joel, like the lie Joel tells him at the end? And I think thank goodness Naughty Dog is aware, is like, yes, we're gonna tie up that plot point because that's on the mind of everybody, of every fan of the game. And so I think making it kind of like a big point of the game was done very well on their part.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hot take, Matt. I think it's the right call. Joel is, pardon my French here, kind of and I say that yes. knowing full well I would be Joel.
Oh yeah.
You know, if that was my daughter or surrogate daughter on that table, I would murder every person in that room. The world, you know. Again, another expletive I'll have to,
that's all right,
I'll have to point, you know. But I would also be like, yeah, no, if people want to kill me for that, that totally makes some logistical sense here. I can understand that, right? You know, it just puts, you know, if you think about it, it really puts all of the death and destruction after that point on him. he didn't just make that choice for Ellie. He made that choice for the whole world. Right. And people, just one person shouldn't have that power. And, you know, this is actually from another podcast we did, but a book I was reading, I think, sums up power really well, that power doesn't circulate because people have done anything specifically to earn it. It is bestowed randomly by chance. Joel was in that position by chance, and he had the power to take away life for millions of people, and he did. And that's crappy. And his relationship with Ellie is always a little crappy. You know what I mean? Like, he's not abusive, but he's emotionally stunted, and their relationship is certainly emotionally stunted. So I think, honestly, the real tragedy, and the flashbacks do a really great job of telling this, is it's not that Ellie lost Joel. It's that Ellie and Joel had finally come to a point where maybe they could have started having a healthy relationship built on mutual understanding and respect. And she lost the opportunity at that. She's mourning Joel as much as she's mourning, as much as she's mourning the possibility that was her life going forward from that point with Joel in it.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I think you just bring up like the last scene. And at first when I saw it, it was like, oh, like I thought at first I was kind of like disappointed. Like, okay, yeah, this doesn't hold a candle to like the first game's last scene, which was like super impactful. But after I stewed on it a bit, I started to come around on like the last scene where Joel and Ellie, possibly one of like their last conversations together, where Ellie realizes, maybe I can try forgiving you, Joel. I grew to like wow, that's kind of like tying that to the rest of the game, and then like you said, like tying this to like the whole entire tragedy of not just losing Joel, but losing the chance of that kind of forgiveness and closure. But then also coming to realizing, like, oh, she was given that chance again with Abby, and she chose the path.
Yeah, like
of
the third time, though.
Or at least letting bygones so be bygones, in a sense.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, you have more to say.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I think I mentioned this in pre-production the other day, but I think like the second game, like this game is very much the end of Joel's story. This was to wrap up his story and character, like the part of Joel that was with Ellie.
Absolutely.
Is now literally laid to rest, and figuratively.
No, not.
But I think Ellie's story isn't done. But I think in terms of this game, kind of like putting a bow on Joel's part in this franchise, I think it did a very good job.
Like, Joel could have been like a, you know, not obviously as humorous, but he's like a leading man character for The Last of Us.
I mean, you don't get Troy Baker for nothing.
Yeah. You know, that could have been Naughty Dog's, you know, other big hero character, and deciding that, no, that character is Ellie, I think is, well, I guess a protagonist character.
Right.
You know, I think is bold. It shouldn't be, but it is. Right. All right. So I want to talk about Abby.
Okay.
Because I really like Abby.
Abby is complicated for me. Her backstory, even though it's another, I'm driven in terms of revenge over a character's death, like having her father be the one, like be the doctor that Joel kills at the end of the first one. I think that was the second time, like I like audibly gasped in like my empty apartment. It's like, oh, that's him. Once it hit me, like,
yeah,
once,
was,
like,
oh no.
That was a very good twist.
It was so good.
And there is a lot I do like about Abby. I do enjoy I do enjoy the scenes with her. I like her relationship with Lev. I like her relationship with the other members of the Washington Liberation Army. But I guess one thing that kind of nags me, it's one of those things like, hey, this character, kind of a fascist, but she's relatable. she's a human just like the rest of us.
Well, but I think to some extent, I see that's a little bit to me about what works about Abby is that she is fundamentally flawed in a way that not that Joel isn't or Ellie isn't, but the game isn't, particularly the first game, isn't as upfront with those characters' flaws. It tries to be more so in this game.
Right.
But, you know, multiple times is Abby called out in her story for her crap. The scene with Mel is perfect, right? She slept with Mel's husband, right? Owen, right? Who's Abby's longtime crush, but she can't be with Owen because she's emotionally stunted with their relationship because he was there with the death of her father. It's flaws, flaws, flaws all the way down, you know, and Mel just goes to her and says, you're a garbage person. Whenever you're around, garbage happens, right? And I'm like, yeah, no, that's pretty true, right? And I think that's, I feel like, you know, maybe they don't own up to all the fascist issues that Abby has, and she does have a few. But I think they try to own a little bit more that Abby is garbage, which makes maybe the, not garbage, but you know what I'm saying. Like I said, I like Abby, but they try to lean into her flaws more than maybe they lean into Joel's flaws in the first game, which makes people, you know, which gives us a little bit more of this controversy because people are like, no, how can you hate Joel? And I'm like, no, because Joel's kind of crappy.
Yeah, Joel is, right? Yeah.
Right, and we can see that Abby's kind of crappy, but that mm-hmm. she's trying and that maybe she's evolving as a person, and that's really all we can ask, right? It doesn't absolve her of her past crimes, right? And that's important and also something that I think sometimes this game misses. I think that's the point, right? It's the point that we get to go on that story with Abby first. It takes Ellie much longer to get there. And for us, the player, who's being forced to witness that narrative with that goal in mind, building empathy for other people, I feel like it makes the emotional weight of the story on her and then on her relationship with Lev.
Mm. All right. Well, speaking of which, let's talk about Lev.
Let's talk about Lev. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lev is hard for me to comment on. I think the biggest problem I have with Lev is the violence against Lev. I think you and I had talked about this, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to separate, like, let's be incredibly violent towards the trans character, and not make us think at some point it's specifically violence against the trans character because they're a trans character. Obviously, that is in some part an element of the story, and that I understand. And, there's obviously, you know, the game is also incredibly violent and awful to everyone, right? So they're, you know, it. I don't think it intends to go out of its way, but does it do that? And that's something I have difficulty commenting on because I am not.
Yeah.
In the position to comment on, but I think it's super concerning.
Yeah, from perspectives, from what I've seen, from people that do stakes with this, from what I've seen, they do kind of feel that it was very much let's make the trans character suffer because he's trans kind of thing. It just a bunch of ways, like the whole entire thing, like where all the scars constantly like dead name him whenever like you fight them. It was like, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, look at how evil these the scars are. They're dead naming your buddy Lev. And it was like I get it. Like, it's not like, like, yeah, these like the, it's like kind of like a religious fundamentalist kind of thing. Like, that's kind of like almost like a commentary on that, because because Lev is considered to be like a pariah of like the society, because of who he is, and like, okay, yeah, I get that's the point, but like the fact that like they decided like, yes, we want to do this a thing, and like I feel like it tries to be, I don't want to say sympathetic, because like that's almost what, like trying to like, oh, like they're trying to be,
yeah, it's like they
try to do right by them, but I think it leans a bit too much into the, look at us, we're progressive, we're gonna show like how bad this is, because, and we know what this is bad, so we're gonna show that it's bad. And it's kind of
yeah, but I think they overstep.
They overstep
by trying to show that it's bad. They overstep and make it harmful, right? Like,
right.
I think the dead naming, right? Like, you could have done a scene where Lev was dead named, but every enemy calling out, right? That seems, you know what I mean? Like, it seems just emotionally brutal point.
Like, they already have like a just like a random like not named like title. I don't know, like not the pariah, but like if they have some name for Lev, and like they could have just used that. It's this person,
the pariah, the outcast,
the outcast kind of thing, and like not have done that, but like they keep on bringing it back. And so that was an issue, but
yeah, I think if they chose a more personal scene where, you know, I don't think a use of that narratively once, right, would have been off the table, but I just think that, yeah, particularly I feel like at the point in the game at which you play that, like, I feel like at that point on Abby's journey, I'm just so over killing all these people. I don't care who they are. Scars, wolves, whatever the case may be. And, you know, then the game's like, well, but we need you to kill these people. So here, we're going to remind you that they're really terrible.
Yeah. That kind of like was very iffy for me. Although on the other hand, at least the game like makes protagonists like very like kind of like open about it. Like, Abby really doesn't question it. I mean, even like Ellie and like the other people in her group, when they talk about Lev, they don't question who Lev is. So I mean, like, the very slim silver lining is like they at least keep that stuff to the decidedly people that you're not supposed to sympathize with.
Yeah. Well, and I like Lev as
Lev is a good character. Like, good character. I mean, like you mentioned before, like the whole entire little bit about him helping Abby overcome her fear of heights. I thought that was very touching, and a little bit in the gameplay thing. I like how if you do look down with your controller, like the screen does like shake, and kind of I think like the camera distorts a bit to simulate the vertigo. Mm-hmm. But I think the Lev and Abby's relationship is very, very nice. I enjoyed their interactions, I do see a lot of The Last of Us 1's Joel and Ellie.
Yeah,
those two, which I actually honestly didn't think about until you brought it up. So thank you for bringing that up, because like, it's a good parallel.
Yeah, and I would love to play more of Lev and Abby.
Yeah, right?
Like I would definitely do more as them. I think they're a powerful pair, and I would, you know, their relationship, you know, at the end of things is way healthier than Joel and Ellie. So that's good.
Yeah.
Is there anything else more you wanted to comment on Lev? I think we hit
everything. Yeah.
The big problem, right?
Yeah. The big issues with it. Lev, Lev's characterization.
All right. So let's go back to Ellie. I feel like, you know, and I think the reason why people might say that Ellie is sympathetic is because we're sympathetic to her from the past, but I have a really difficult time connecting with Ellie in this game. Often. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing. I definitely have that problem.
I agree. I also have that issue. I'm not sure if it was the best decision to go in that direction with her.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the terms of not the exact same, but sort of similar with Lev. It's like, okay, we finally have nice queer representation in video games, but maybe let's make the character now an asshole kind of thing. It was like, okay, yeah, I get, like, narratively, this is the direction you want to go. It fits, it tracks with the story that you want to tell, but did you really have to go this direction? Like, or like, was there other ways he could approach this without taking one of the very few positive queer video game reps in video game history? And be like, and then be like, oh wait, maybe you should not like this person anymore.
Yeah, it's rough. It's
rough. Yeah, I mean, I don't, personally, I don't think they go full on. It's like, okay, yeah, no, Ellie is a terrible person. Don't like her at all. I think there's very much, there's still a lot to like about her, and
Ellie still has many redeeming qualities.
Qualities, yeah. And I was going to say, her relationship with Dina, I think that was... I really like the relationship between two, between those two. Also, the relationship between her and Jesse.
Yep.
Their friendship, I thought, was really fun. I wish there's kind of more to do with Jesse before he's killed
off.
For
sure, yeah.
I totally get where you're coming from, though. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, especially when you throw, like, Abby in the mix now, and you get, like, a whole bunch of other perspectives besides just Ellie's perspective.
Yeah,
it's tougher.
The game doesn't spend too much time reminding you of why you liked Ellie. It leans on the first game,
right?
That you'll still have this strong connection with her. And certainly at times you do, right? Mm. Her memories with Joel, you know, or even her starting to come to realize a lot of these things. Certainly, I think, you know, one of the most telling, or one of the scenes that reminded me of why I was still playing this journey with Ellie is when she's gathering up the sheep, right? Before she goes out to find Abby one last time. And she has that PTSD from Joel. And I'm reminded, you know, after playing the whole Abby story, just how traumatic that is for her, you know, and just how much not at peace with it she is, particularly because it contrasts so well with the feeling we see of Abby's last kind of flashback scene, right? Where she gets to go down the hall and it's not burning and it's not this. And, you know, she gets her father standing there. You know, we get the idea that she's made peace with it. And we know that, you know, even if we don't want Ellie to commit her revenge, we do want her to find peace. So I think it does hit the mark. It does hit the mark often well, and sometimes it doesn't. I like just the physical contrast too between the two of them, right? Abby transforms, builds herself, right? So she gets jacked and just freaking like a beast. But Ellie withers away, you know? the Ellie that's, you know, fighting the withered up Abby at the end of the game is just as, feels just as meek and beaten, you know, right. And she's not, she wasn't in the position Abby was for those prior months. So yeah, I think the disconnection from Ellie is hard in this game because the emotional weight of the story lies on Abby.
Right.
That doesn't make it bad, and that doesn't mean I don't enjoy the journey with Ellie. It certainly makes me happy that they kind of end in a way that makes me think they will make a Last of Us 3.
Right.
Where we can have an Ellie who's at peace with her existence in this world. You know, but it's hard to say that this game feels like Ellie's story, right? I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the ending of Joel's story or the beginning of Abby and Lev's story.
Right.
But it never feels like Ellie's story.
Right. No, I agree. That makes sense. I agree a lot with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's just not what I expected.
Not what you expected. Yeah. Although I do got to say, I thought the actually fighting Ellie as kind of like a boss fight. That was really cool. I thought that was a really cool fight.
I hated every minute of it, but I enjoyed the fight. Let's talk about the game, right? We've definitely divided into the characters and we're almost at an hour. So let's talk about what the gameplay does. Cause it's mostly fantastic.
Yes. In terms of gameplay, I will laud that from, here on after. I mentioned this in pre-production, maybe elsewhere. But The Last of Us, the first game and this game, especially, immerses you, so well in the setting, not just with like the story and the characters and the visuals, but also with the gameplay, the gameplay loop of gathering supplies for survival, crafting weapons while you're in danger, improvising when you run out of one thing but you have stuff of another. It really draws you into the setting. It really makes you feel like you're a kind of survivor. It's one of the few games where I feel the need to what a lot of people like to call the RP walk, where normally you could just like run through a room, like do blah blah blah, push the buttons there, et cetera, et cetera. But for like The Last of Us 2, I feel the need to just kind of like take in the scenery, take my time, walk slowly, explore every nook and cranny. Even like expanded beyond that, I do something what I like to call the RP room clear. So just like just in this setting where like danger is around every corner, and you never know when you're gonna get into a fight. Like I always approach a room carefully, even if took a step back and thought like video game wise, okay, yeah, there's not gonna be any fighting here. I always still go out, guns drawn, slowly checking every single nook and cranny, every corner, every ledge, making sure just to double check, make sure that everything's safe. But also, it just feels like it feels better part of the setting. It's like, yes, this is something that Ellie or Abby would do in this kind of situation, and I want to like RP that thing out. I want to be this character. I want to immerse myself into this game, into the setting. And not many games make me want to do that.
Well, and the game encourages that. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
But by little tricks, like the attack at the workbench.
That was such a mean trick. I complained about it on Discord immediately after it happened. Like I got through that scene, that I immediately went back to my computer, went to our Discord, and it was like, that was mean. That was such a mean trick, and it was brilliant.
it was so good. Another seamless kind of blend of that gameplay and storytelling and cinematic, I think, is right after Abby gets down from hanging, right? The scene before it is, you know, obviously it's beautifully lit. It's, you know, it's dark, it's ominous, you know, the camera pans back, and then it just seamlessly, you're in the game. You're Abby, and the monsters are coming at you, and you gotta go, right? Yeah. And it was like everything about that was just, it was so seamless. You know, like, I wish every scene of every game worked like that. It was just beautiful. Another thing too, I really liked is just the subtle differences of playing Abby versus Ellie, or maybe not subtle differences. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they had distinctly different play styles.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like, Abby, yeah, for Ellie, I'm always walking around quiet, trying to be safe and cautious. Abby, sometimes I'd be like, I walk into a room with a bunch of clickers, I'd be like, come on.
Oh yeah. Abby is very much like, even like her abilities, like her melee upgrade abilities, where you could, like, if you melee one enemy, your next one is also super powerful. Hers is very much encouraged to be kind of like a fighting, like, you want to fight the enemies, which makes sense. She's a soldier. She has abilities to complement that. And meanwhile, Ellie is like, takes from Joel, which, so that means like lots of stealth, lots of ambushes, lots of traps, kind of thing. Like, going back to like the boss fight against Ellie, like, it's, I thought it was really cool how, like, when you fight Ellie, she uses all of like the tricks and stuff that you do as a player, like setting mines,
yep,
it's like setting ambushes, that kind of thing.
Honestly, I was like, damn it, the computer is better at being Ellie than me.
We mentioned before the whole entire sniper sequence. That was really good.
Incredible.
One thing I know we had different experiences with was the Scar Island.
And here's one of the few, I'll double this into two things. You know, the one frustration I have with the game is, I don't think at some points the gameplay supports the narrative structure. And I think at some points it does really well. I'll mention one more at the end of this where I think it actually is something that I turned my opinion around on. The obsession with the collecting and the upgrading the weapons, and it's very standard video game, but it feels a little out of place in a story that's eventually supposed to be about stopping the cycle of violence. You know, that your tools will only ever be these violent tools. And then I was so over fighting people by the time I got to the Scars Island as Abby, because I just felt she'd learned that lesson. Like, it was very clear,
right
at that point. You know, we're talking about some of that heavy-handedness. Right. You know, I was just over it. And again, playing this in 2020 and the violence, and the night I was having, I just needed a break from it. And trying to sneak through the island for me, I know you ended up doing it pretty well, but I had such a difficulty trying to sneak through the island, you know, like, and I didn't want to have to like kill people or see myself like die so much.
Right.
You know, and then the Scar Island ends with what is just such brutality.
Right.
You know, it's incredibly done, and it accentuates the points. It's hard. And
yeah, no, I absolutely, I agreed.
Yeah. And I wish there was some subtle reward for you choosing to be aware of the story that was being told.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, even just the same sort of, you know, like when you clear a room of walkers or bad guys, like, I don't think there's any more. You know, when you get past a bunch of people without killing them, there should be like a, that was easy. Or, you know, like, you know, just something.
A little, some kind of acknowledgement. Yeah.
Something there. Yeah. Yeah. That I picked up on what the story they were trying to tell was. Opposite, though, something gameplay-wise I turned around on that I didn't like originally was that you having to commit that final act of violence in both the scenes, right? Whether you're Abby or Ellie, right? When you're attacking, like, the animatics, the forcing you to throw that punch and really feel it. You know, at first I felt that was very counterintuitive to the game's message, but the more I thought about how the game wants you, that the game really wants you, for because it wants to teach you that empathy, it wants you to be at odds with the game itself, like literally on a base functional level. You know, I think that idea, that mentality, if that's truly what they were going for, might be genius, right? I don't know. It's hard to say, right? It could just be like, no, we just needed to give you something to do with during the animatics. Right? But if I choose to view it that way, if I choose to see it as, you know, if you're to be ever aware that you are learning this lesson, that you're learning this empathy, that you are against the actions the character is making, that you're almost against the game itself at times, that makes it really interesting and compelling. And I think, you know, and I think the reasons that I support that theory is because, you know, like we mentioned, the sniper scene, right? There's a lot of other great places where game play integrates so seamlessly into that message and so seamlessly into that storytelling mechanic that I think it could be possible. It could be. It probably isn't, but it could be. So, yeah, I'm trying to think. The game just, it plays really well. It looks beautiful. It's so smooth. It's so gorgeous. Gorgeous. It feels like a weird word to describe it, but at times it really is beautiful.
It's, yeah, right? Absolutely.
You know?
It's Naughty Dog's, like, art tech is second to none.
For sure. And everyone who worked on this game deserves just, you know, particularly on the development level.
Yes. Deserves, yeah, like, kudos. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, talk a little bit about, right, the end cycle of development on this game, because I think that's a big deal, right?
Yes.
Maybe something good to end on.
Yes. So, I mean, like, it's no surprise anymore that, like, this game had a ton of crunch involved. Although, I guess, like, it's really been, like, a more, almost kind of like a more recent thing that, like, people are willing to talk about crunch culture in video games development. I know I had a lot of the talk about crunch culture when I was reviewing, like, Red Dead Redemption 2 for Non-Pro. I talked a lot about that. And for The Last of Us 2, it's very much, sadly, a very similar situation where it's devs working incredibly long hours, like incredibly long weeks with like no rest or vacation. And like to the point of, I believe in some, like at least one instance, hospitalization.
Oh, wow.
And just like lots of huge levels of burnout for little to no gain in some circumstances. Like I think like one story I heard, like there was like a whole entire argument about this one section of the game, which ended up wasting 3 weeks of work for a group of people. And just the fact that like the, unfortunately, Naughty Dog kind of has the, not like the company, but like the rock star mindset of like, yeah, you're here to do the job. It's hard work. It's tough. It's grueling, but you're a rock star and you get through it all. And then you be very proud of the product at the end. And it's like a kind of like a very, well, like, I can't think of any better way to say it. It's a very unhealthy mindset for a company work culture, because it leads to like a horrible amounts of attrition. And but for people that stay in, especially for the people kind of like that buy into it, it leads to retaliation against people that don't want to deal with that kind of stuff, and they shouldn't need to deal with that stuff. I think I saw on Twitter there was a bit of a discussion where somebody from like a like one of the like higher level employees of Naughty Dog was unsubtly talking about, was like, hey, if you want to work in this industry, you better you shouldn't be quote saying like quote unquote slander or innuendo against previous employers, or else you're not going to get a job. And like he was immediately called out. I was like, yeah, like we like, so you don't want people talking about unhealthy and unfair work conditions. You just want to just hide it all under the rug, because you got just need to worry about the bottom line in the end, and not about like the health and safety of the people creating this kind of thing.
I think it's
something that really, unfortunately, like hasn't been resolved. It's still an ongoing thing, and it's been reported, but it really hasn't been addressed outside of some kind of like milquetoast response, like yeah. Boilerplate responses.
I think what's just so frustrating about that is just like, what does a AAA title game like this really have to lose? Are people going to really cancel their pre-order for The Last of Us Part 2 because they delayed it another few months? Particularly this game in this style. Like, there's at no point that this game was going to come out and be like better or less better received. Right?
Yeah, I mean, like yeah, it's kind of like yeah, Naughty Dog games are kind of, they're almost like Marvel movies in the sense, like, yeah, there's going to be an audience for them, and it's going to make a ton of money regardless of whether like the game is delayed for like the actual point of giving people more time and not just making people crunch even more.
Well, and making a better game.
But allowing them to take the time and carefully and safely make a game. Even if something was kind of like couldn't be fit in before like the buzzer, I highly doubt that whatever was going to be like whatever is missing would greatly affect people's overall like reception of it. People will still love it. People will still like it. Will still make millions of dollars in profits. And it'll still make millions of dollars in profits, and you won't have to, and like, but there'll be less attrition, and basically like just unhealthy conditions for people. Like it, like just there's got to be. There needs to be more empathy and understanding, which is so, considering the themes of this game. Like, as soon as you laughed, it hit me. It was like, my God, this is like, yeah, it's twisted. It's just really twisted.
The executives at Naughty Dog really need to play The Last of Us. I think this is, I don't, we're not going to get a better spot.
End this. I mean, I laugh, but I laugh because it's such a messed up issue, and it's so just like it's ridiculous at how like conditions are, and how like it's how during this time, like things aren't changing, but like, yes, it's like, this isn't a laugh trying to make light of anything. I just want to be clear about that. But like, it's very much a man. This, yeah, it's like there needs to be change. But yes, I'm sorry, I interrupted your closing.
No, I think that's right. You know, I think this game is teaching us something that we, you know, that ideally we need now, right? Whether that's right. In industry or in
the world in general,
the world in general, and business and capitalism, yeah. You know, we need to have empathy, and we need to care and be concerned about others.
Right.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, says The Last of Us 2. You know, and I think, yeah, I think it does a really good job at trying to get that across. And I think it was a mostly outstanding game. you know, it's not, I think my closing words are, it's, you know, it's hard because, you know, I feel like we always think that like games need to be fun, but I don't necessarily have that same sort of, I need to have an incredibly joyous experience from reading a book or watching a movie, right? Schindler's List isn't an incredibly joyous experience. It's an incredible movie. And I think that's kind of what we have here, right? Mm-hmm. We have a game that tells a really incredible story, an incredible narrative with incredible game design, you know, that is not without its flaws for sure, as we outlined. But yeah, I think it's a push in a new, in it, not a new direction for gaming, but something that feels different for a big AAA title. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they can do that more responsibly next time. Mm. You know, in talking about their teams, not necessarily their choices in the game, although there are obviously some issues there. Yeah. What about you, Matt? Any other thoughts to sum up?
I guess my closing thoughts, I really liked playing The Last of Us 2. I actually held off on playing it for a long time just because I was... I'm a unfortunately online person, so I was very much surrounded by the discourse and discussion about the game, and it honestly kind of pushed me off from playing it. But I'm glad I did play it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. It's some of the arguments and discussion I think I disagree with, but a lot of other ones I do agree. And I do think that there is definite room for improvement, and a need for probably a lot of like self-reflection, by like the senior Naughty Dog staff on like kind of like the stories they want to tell, and also especially the kind of like the development cycle that they want to have.
Yeah, for sure.
But yes, it was a game that I very much enjoyed. Especially if definitely a must play if you're a fan of The Last of Us 1, and even if you're just a fan of video games, I would at least recommend trying it out or playing it through and like come up with your own opinions of the game.
Yeah.
Like well, your own thoughts and feelings. I think it's whether you end up liking it or not in the end, if whether you agree or disagree with the decisions and directions they go, I think it's worth experiencing just so you could come up with your own decision at the end.
Yeah,
kinda like this, Ellie does and Abby does.
I was going to say, this is a game that must be played. You know, we said it before, but you can't read the events of this game and get the whole picture because that's just not how games work, right? That's how books work.
Yep, that's the point of books. But yes.
All right, Matt. Well, thank you very much for talking this out with me. I learned even a lot about my experience with the game from talking to you. So this is fantastic.
Yes.
And so 13, so are we going to wait another 7 years for The Last of Us 3? Maybe 10. You know what? It should probably be 10 so that they can take their time.
All right. Thank you for listening to everybody. And be sure to keep an ear out and keep an eye out for more.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure you...
topics and discussions. And, yeah.
Yeah, fun topics, discussions. Make sure you like, subscribe, give us a follow on all of our stuff. Check out our Facebook fan page. And we're even doing some stuff over on our Twitch, right? Matt, you are streaming Final Fantasy X right now. We've been streaming Star Trek on Friday nights. And all this week or next week, depending on when this airs, Dungeon Not Included is going to also be live on Twitch every night. So we're doing a lot over on our Twitch channel. So check us out there, too. All right. Night, everybody.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive Producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.